interest. And also, I have a guest who's never given a radio interview before. Her name is Julian McKinney. For those of you who don't know who she is, she's an expert in electronic harassment and surveillance, former military background. And those of you who follow this story on my show, many may know who she is and the importance she has in this field, which is going to lay some very solid credibility to what we've been talking about. So this interview is quite important, and I want you to remember that as we go along. She's a very, very well-read person. We're going to get to that in a minute. Problem of the use of electronic weaponry on a person was when I was working in a law office, and the law office I worked for, this was several, a number of years ago, law office I worked for prided in taking cases that were difficult, and I listened to a person tell me about the facts regarding the use of electronic weaponry, and had a discussion with somebody else in the law firm, and we came to this conclusion that causation, Greg, remember that element. It's going to be awfully difficult to link what's happening to the person, the injuries they were alleging, to actually the person or the defendants that were doing it. So it was a case, I'll be very honest with you, I was very skeptical over. But as a journalist, I started to interview a number of people, and I would like to say that this issue, after a number of years, has come up to one at the top in my list as a problem in our country. Talked to hundreds of people all around the country who are experiencing things that are just unbelievable. And from a standpoint of the law, you want to get justice for these people. You hate to see their lives destroyed. You hate to see what happens to a person that's been harassed. But the biggest problem is it's very difficult to pinpoint what's going on. I have a guest today who's an expert in this field. You, the public may not know who she is, but those of you who have been targeted and listened to my show know very well. She's never interviewed before, and I feel honored that she's here. Her name is Julian McKinney. She is had an extensive career in the U.S. Army as an area intelligence case officer until 1990. Upon her return to civilian life, Julian became a member of the Association of the National Security Alumni. That is an organization of former intelligence officers dedicated to exposing excesses by the U.S. intelligence services. Julian became the director of the Electronics Surveillance Project under their auspices, and such, she authored the publication Microwave Harassment and Mind Control Experimentation in 1991. She kept that electronic surveillance project going for 4 years by funding it with her own personal funds obtained through her military benefits pay. Julian did not copyright her work, and it is out in the public domain for the public good. Microwave Harassment and Mind Control Experimentation. The public has taken her hard copy publication and uploaded it to several thousand domain sites over the past 15 years. It is still respected as one of the most important publications on this subject. And with that, I'd like to say hello, Ms. McKinney. How are you today?
Please don't call me Ms. McKinney.
Okay, can I say Julian?
Yes, Julianne.
Now, you're an expert in surveillance and electronic harassment. And the first question I have, is it your observation that there is a wider scale of surveillance of average people, people with no threat to the national security, in your estimation?
I would say that most of those targeted are not and never have been a threat. I think that what happened initially when these operations began probably 30 years ago, people were singled out perhaps because of some affiliation, either direct or indirect, with the United States government. And invited attention, but they were not singled out as being threats. They were singled out as being lucrative targets of experimentation. In the past 15 years, since shutting down the electronic surveillance project, primarily to seek employment, which I did seek and did obtain, I had occasion to observe many, many, many instances of individuals in the corporate environment being singled out and targeted simply because they were convenient targets of opportunity. And I have to comment on something I heard you say early on. You referred to the difficulty of establishing causation in order to pursue these claims.
And that, and I might add, that was made in a legal sense based on the fact that we were naive people, not really understand. I'd be honest with you, I had not understood the problem back then and felt it would be a difficult problem just based on the fact of knowing how the crime is committed, how to pin that crime on someone. Go ahead.
I understand the legal implications, certainly. There is enough literature on the Internet and elsewhere that establishes the existence of these weapon systems. To pinpoint, for purposes of prosecution, to pinpoint their existence would be difficult. And the position I take is that rather than pinpoint them for prosecution purposes, it's easy enough to single them out by electronic means and to destroy them. But I guess that's taking the matter a little far afield. I think, frankly, we still face, until Congress establishes laws that forbid the use of these technologies for involuntary experimental purposes, that we're going to get absolutely nowhere in attempting to prosecute.
Okay. Listen, I need to take a break, Julian, and we'll be back in 3 minutes on the Investigative Journal.
Okay.
Okay, back for the second half hour. My guest is Julian McKinney. She's an expert on surveillance and electronic harassment. And, Julian, I gave you an introduction at the beginning of the show,
yes.
Brief introduction, but I think our listeners would like to know your background and why you're qualified to make these statements. I think it's important.
Okay.
If you could do that, please.
Well, I would take exception to the term expert in these weapon systems.
Okay.
I certainly have had experience with them. Having for approximately the past 40 years been on the receiving end of this type of harassment.
Okay.
Expertise in surveillance comes with my employment in the intelligence field. I understand what constitutes surveillance. I'm capable of immediately spotting a surveillance, and I can see, as in the case of gang stalking, a subject which you have addressed on prior occasions, can see those who I label as covert wannabes, bumbling and stumbling through what they think are covert activities, and find it really rather amusing if it weren't so perverted in the ultimate objective. I'm not certain what more I can add. I do have experience with these weapon systems. I've had sufficient opportunity over these past many years to observe the progressive spread of these harassment operations, and I'm talking specifically about electronic weapon systems.
Well, you've been a strong voice for warning people of these systems for at least the past 10 years regarding the installation of specialized electronic equipment on utilities. What are these electronics, and what are their capabilities?
Their capabilities generally are to inflict pain in highly focused fashion and to alter mental states. Certainly when you have a frequency aimed at your brain, your mental functions tend to alter. In amplified form, they're sufficient. Frequencies have the capacity to kill. So that's why one reason why the Department of Defense refers to them as less than lethal rather than non-lethal weapons. As a matter of fact, the Department of Defense has gone so far as to eliminate them, to remove them from the category of even less than lethal weapons and to bury them under the category of electronic weapons, trying to make them a little bit blacker.
Now, is this protocol of surveillance and harassment seemingly patterned after a government protocol now applied to the general civilian population?
It's difficult to pinpoint everything at this stage on the U.S. government exclusively because these are global operations.
Okay.
The pattern, the protocols are virtually identical on a global scale. So someone is overseeing the entire activity. The government obviously is complicit because otherwise these operations would not be allowed to exist. Why? It's hard to say. Whether it's for testing electronic weapon systems for future use under combat conditions, or whether ultimately there's a holocaust in the offing, it's hard to say.
Well, you know what I find interesting? How people who aren't aware of this problem can't believe it happened to begin with. And I try to mention, I have run stories about Stories about the Du Plessis orphans. It's a program that's been verified that the government actually used money in Canada and the United States to do medical testing on children, on adults. I've talked to people in the POW issue. Dr. Joe Douglas, who has documented how our government has allowed foreign governments to do illegal experimentation on POWs. So why would people think they wouldn't allow it on just average citizens? Just in your mind, what do you have an answer for people? And what do you think about that?
Why wouldn't they allow it?
Yeah, I mean, my thing is they do it. They're doing it. But some people that deny it can't believe that our government would do something like this.
And you'll find even among the community of, I hate using slang terms, but the term TI is common, referring to targeted individuals.
Okay.
Those are people who fully realize that they are on the receiving end of electronic weapons systems. But even amongst TIs, there is the perception in certain areas that our government would not do this. It's a case of not recognizing reality. First of all, if this were not being done by our government, Congress would step in because of the hundreds of complaints they have received, thousands of complaints, no doubt, over the past 10, 15 years from citizens who recognize what's going on. Congress, back in the early 90s, late 80s, took the position that anyone complaining about these systems were imagining things because they simply didn't exist. Within 2 years, by 1992, they were off the drawing boards and, in fact, being fielded and conveyed to law enforcement agencies. Congress recognizes that these weapons systems exist and funds them and knows, as a result of appropriate briefings, what the bio effects can be, yet they have passed no legislation prohibiting their use under unconstrained experimental circumstances. That's number one. Number two, given that these systems draw on existing power grids, it would be necessary for the FCC as a minimum and the Department of Energy as a minimum to have some oversight and control over what is going on. So obviously, with Congress, the FDA, and the Department of Energy, the FCC and the Department of Energy are knowledgeable and yet unwilling to do anything about it. So there is complicity, but the question is, at whose bidding is the U.S. government allowing these operations to take place?
Now, from your experience, how intense is this surveillance of targeted individuals? And tell us about the ways that this is accomplished.
From what I have observed, first of all, I should explain that the standard, as I address this in microwave harassment and mind control experimentation, there was a pattern that was unfolding when I was dealing with other targeted individuals who had contacted me. There was a pattern of harassment which indicated that there had been some surveillance going on, some monitoring of their private lives. There had been entry into their houses. There was systematic harassment, and then ultimately, as part of a softening up process, and then ultimately electronic harassment would follow, which would include the inducement of auditory input, which is now being referred to as V2K. In answer to your question, I'm not certain if I think I'm probably missing the point there, but in order to target someone, it requires that person be put under surveillance so that their personality traits, their capacity to interrelate with people, their capacity for corruption or non-corruption, that seems to be a critical point. And even their religion factors into it. Following a period of harassment, they are singled out for preliminary stages of harassment, which would include gang stalking, entry of their private homes and apartments, followed by gradually intensified and ultimately extremely intensified electronic harassment. This is a pattern that has unfolded over and over and over.
And so when you, I guess what I'm getting at, and that's a very good answer, this you're seeing a pattern amongst these individuals.
It's global.
Yeah. Is there any pattern about how they choose them?
I can't speak for men. It seems that quite a few of the women who are singled out appear to be somewhat too independent, perhaps too intelligent, tend to live alone, or tend to pursue professional careers. There's a heavy predominance of those types of women in the PI community, the community of targeted individuals. Men are in a smaller proportion and seem to be those who have a propensity to fly off the handle, have a sense of self-esteem and pride that seems to invite targeting. And I did mention also a curious predominance of a certain lack of religion amongst PIs as opposed to a certain predominance of a particular religion amongst those who are participating in these operations.
Now, you mentioned this was a global problem. Have
Yes.
you communicated with people from across the Atlantic regarding what's going on in other countries?
Yes,
is it similar to here?
It's virtually identical, virtually identical. When I was running the electronic surveillance project, I was in extensive correspondence with people overseas. And the patterns were the same. The nature of the gang stalking and the harassment were the same.
Now, when you're talking about specific numbers, I know you've been following this for years and years and years. Is there any way that you can give our listeners a kind of an idea of how widespread this problem is in terms of numbers in our country and compared to maybe overseas?
Well, I would say that the persons who have realized what's going on are just a drop in the bucket. The persons whom I have seen being targeted are completely unaware of what's happening. So those who are complaining of this are, as I said, a tip of the iceberg. I would say this is probably very, very widespread. But I can't, under the circumstances, come up with any figures. Many, many, many thousands, no doubt, are involved. But I would say that the bulk of those are running to their doctors and taking totally unnecessary prescription drugs to cure ailments that, in fact, don't exist.
I guess that you have to ask this question, even though it's very difficult to answer, and you mentioned, you said it earlier, but I really have to ask it because it's on my mind, and I know it's always in the back of everyone's mind when they think of this problem. Why? What is the major outside of just the pure experimentation, I'm interested, for example, let's say they have targeted 100 people in Oklahoma. What are they, first of all, why are they doing it? Is it for some, is it for basically a blanket statement controlling the population? Or, and what do they do with this information once they get it?
I don't think they do anything with the information once they get it other than to establish a harassment protocol with, which will follow that targeted individual for the rest of his or her life. Why are they doing it? I see a number of reasons. First, I don't know if you've done any research on the phenomenon of capturing a percentage of the population in order to install a dictatorship. There is always a percentage of the population, roughly 20% or so, who will buckle and throw whatever constitutions might exist into the toilet and eagerly join the effort at destroying the remainder of the population. Part of the problem or part of the objectives that they are seeking, obviously, is testing the latest and greatest in electronic weaponry and other forms of technologies. A part of it is to control and choreograph those who are involved in these harassment operations on the dispensing end. And it would appear that those being targeted are simply objects who I see as ultimately being disposable. In other words, I think that once full control is established over a major percentage of the population and enough of the population is silenced and unwilling to stick their necks out, that we inevitably would be heading toward a Holocaust.
The question, if I was, for example, let's say we have a person who suspects, and let's just for hypothetical purposes say this person is being targeted, okay? Mm-hmm. Now, tell our listeners, because I've always wondered this myself, okay, I'm sitting in my house, and I see around me there's telephone poles, there may be a tower in the distance that I don't see that handles the cell phones. There's, of course, a grid of electric going on around me. I've talked to people, and I try to say, how does this get into your house? And I wanted to get your opinion on if a person is targeted, how basically are they beginning to intrude their premises and violate their constitutional rights, not only their rights of, not only trespassing on their property. Go ahead. How would that happen?
Now, are you talking about how would the frequencies impact upon them and how would they first become aware of it, or how would they first become aware of the fact that their privacy has been violated?
Well, no, I guess I didn't explain the question right. I guess I wanted to know how they physically are doing it. I mean, are they using a cell tower? Are they using a truck that's in the distance? How is this being transmitted into the home to target the person and to use this weaponry on them from your experience?
Well, first of all, in order to target a person, you have to be able to see that person. And while they may not be able to, they may, on entering the house, have implanted miniature cameras, miniature microphones as a means of further monitoring the person, but that is not necessarily the means by which they home in on a person. There are plenty of technologies that allow for the imaging of a person who might be sitting in a chair, as you mentioned you might be. Using infrared imagery techniques, for example, they can capture your image by monitoring the concentration of heat emanating from your body. Using certain acoustical frequencies, they can detect mass. And using sophisticated computer software, they can convert those images to likenesses on computers, which conceivably could be used in a software program that would be connected to an electronic weapon system. And in that context, I should point out that while devices draw on the existing power grid, and while they, yes, indeed, they do involve microwave towers. Sounds like you've got a commercial coming on.
Yeah, we do. And thank you for making my job easier. We'll be back in 3 minutes on the Investigative Journal. I've put this in the top three of my stories that I believe are important that the American people need to deal with. Because as Ms. McKinney, who is, I consider her an expert, she would only say she's an authority, but let me tell you, Julian, you are an expert in this. The reasons could be, like she said at the before we went into the break, and total testing of our population to see, basically, perhaps maybe there is a Holocaust in the future or a dictatorship in the future, and they want to see how people react to it. That may be a simplistic way to look at it, but not the simplistic way that Julian looked at it, but my way of explaining it. But let's get back to some of the things here in the last few minutes that are important. What can you tell us, Julian, about the use of microwave energy on citizens in terms of the existence of such a program and the nuts and bolts of what they do?
Microwave energy is only one aspect of the entire electromagnetic frequency spectrum. Microwaves can be lethal depending upon how they're used. Obviously, in order to achieve appropriate effects on people, they have to be pulsed because otherwise the individual would be cooked from the inside out. The objective of using microwaves as opposed to other electromagnetic frequencies would be to inflict extremes of pain to cause thermal heating. That's a common complaint, which leaves a hot spot on the skull. And again, primarily just to inflict extremes of pain. I was just wondering, we kind of skipped over or didn't quite complete a preceding topic.
Oh, go ahead. Go ahead.
We were talking about use of the electrical grid.
Okay.
Throughout the country, the use of microwave towers, the use of devices affixed to poles that are connected to power lines. But what wasn't addressed, or what you haven't mentioned, is also that these weapon systems are used by neighbors surrounding persons who've been singled out as targets of opportunity. And
are they solicited for to do this, or what?
That's something that I've been pondering for quite some time. Again, what I've noticed is there seems to be a predominance of a particular religion that makes it particularly easy for them to cooperate.
Well, listen, let's talk about that after the break. I got a short break, and then I've got something to some business I have to take care of for 3 or 4 minutes, and then we'll get back for our second hour with Julian McKinney. We'll take some calls back in 2 minutes on the Investigative Journal. By some of the TIs, and that's targeted individuals, now that song rose to number one without any publicity on the Internet. And that song called TI, we'll play that again, Dr. McKinney, I think hits the nail on the head. I mean, there's a lot of people out there suffering. And I know you're one person, an authority in this field. And if for my guests who are just picking us up this hour, Julianne McKinney is a very highly regarded person in the field of electronic weaponry and surveillance in studying this issue. She's a former area intelligence case officer until 1990 in the Army. And her credentials can be found, will be found. You can go to rbnlive.com and go to my archives on the Investigative Journal and read about that. But she's well qualified. She's still with us this hour. And I keep calling you doctor, and you should be.
I'm not a doctor. Thank you.
That's okay.
Emeritus.
Dr. Emeritus. That's funny. I have a doctorate in law. Nobody ever calls me that. I hate being called that, a doctor. But I'm interviewed on a Tehran radio TV station once every blue moon, a couple months, and they refer to me as Dr. Samansky. And it's nice to hear once in a while. I'll be honest with you. Every 2 months is good enough. Otherwise, they just call me the jerk on the radio, which is better. But let's go from here. You're adding such credibility to this story, adding credibility in my mind as I speak, because I've talked to hundreds of these people. Was a doubting Thomas in the beginning. I must mention that. I did not think it existed. And that was years ago. I thought people were either insane or crazy or trying to get attention. But you know something? I will admit I was totally wrong with that initial, look at the situation, and have come around to fully believe in most of the people I talk to and really sympathize with their suffering as I see their lives being ripped apart. Are there any things you can do? We're going to get into a few more things here as far as the technical aspects of this, but what can targeted individuals do to get some peace in their life? I mean, that's one thing they're looking for. Is there anything they can do? It's a difficult question.
Long, prolonged silence. Time for another commercial. It's very difficult to advise targeted individuals on how to acquire peace. These frequencies can be blocked or deflected. All of these frequencies I have found, some may contest this, but I have found are vulnerable and are subject to deflection, and the pain can be ameliorated if not halted altogether. finding peace by writing to members of Congress or to state legislators might not be the better alternative, because you will be treated as something worthy of the circular basket.
Mm-hmm.
They just won't intervene. Writing to the various agencies and calling and meeting with them serves no useful purpose either, because they will say there are no laws prohibiting these types of activities. They can't say, for example, the FBI, and I was given this statement on a number of occasions, there are no laws prohibiting experimentation with these weapon systems. You're talking to the wrong people. My advice would be to do what you can to secure your premises, because so long as your house is or apartment is being entered, you are susceptible to, in addition to being targeted by electronic weapons, there is the potential for having drugs surreptitiously put in your food. And I'm not exaggerating there.
I had a few targeted individuals that I talked to send me some questions they would like to ask you. And one was, are targeted individuals also broadcast around the country via closed-circuit TV? And what purposes does this serve? I'm fully in the dark on this question, but go ahead.
Okay. I have seen evidence of a closed-circuit TV, and it seems to be some form of major source of entertainment and perhaps instruction for the individuals participating in this harassment. I don't know who runs it. I have seen aspects of it on a large screen TV across the street, on which I saw surveillance films of a TI being harassed, obviously, in an office environment, gang stalked. Shows brain scans and is otherwise a very sophisticated and sleek communications operation. Why would it be used, as I said, either for entertainment, for creating a sense of unity, for identifying persons, TIs, who are to be harassed on the street? I mean, obviously, you can't harass someone if you don't know what that person looks like. So it's a means of communicating to the perpetrators, the perps, what a TI looks like.
Okay. Now, before I get to some more, when I put out that call for people to call, I got a couple of emails. A lot of times TIs do not want to go public, and they've sent me some emails. I want to get to one in a minute. But one question I have for you is, how can people gather evidence to support their beliefs that this is happening to them? Many people will say, well, it's only a lack of sleep. I mean, you have a sleep disorder. Perhaps there's a problem with your joints. I don't know. It could be anything that the answers are when you suspect you're being targeted. But what kind of evidence do you tell people to gather to support their beliefs that this is actually happening to them?
Well, when you're gathering evidence, obviously you have an objective in mind, and that generally is legal. And what do you want to do with that evidence? There's really nothing you can do with it. But so, in the absence of that, the main thing is to try to protect yourself and to alleviate the pain that you're experiencing. Collecting the evidence, if you were to go to, frankly, I strongly recommend that you keep your faculties together and avoid going to see psychiatrists and psychologists, because the pattern that is evolving is that they are highly complicit in these operations. And if you go to a medical doctor, you do not talk about because medical doctors, many are also involved.
So basically,
what you do when you see a doctor is that you define your symptoms and get a very clear statement, well, we can't figure this out. Well, that's a clear indication that it is not endogenous. It's not part of your system. It's not coming from within you. Then obviously something is happening from outside. if they prescribe drugs and yet can't find the etiology, the basis for your disease, don't take those drugs.
Now, earlier we were talking about the fact that they may, who's ever doing this, and you've delineated, you've led a good course into what, you're tracking these people. But what I was getting at, we never got to the point where if you mentioned something about a religious group that may be targeted.
Well,
and what did you mean by that?
The way let me put it this way. I'm not anxious to start a religious war. I have found over the years that the persons involved, both in gang stalking, I've made it a point to get to know these people. I've had to necessarily. I'm not the type to.
You're talking about the perpetrators or the targets?
Perpetrators.
Okay.
As well as the, I've been drawing distinctions. And what I have found is that the perpetrators appear to belong predominantly to one particular religion, whereas the targeted individuels do not belong predominantly to that particular religion.
And what is the particular religion of the perpetrators?
Right. So at this stage, again, I'm not particularly enthused about the idea of starting a religious war, and I have challenged other PIs to get out there and become acquainted with, get to know the people who are harassing them, to draw those distinctions themselves, because I'm not going to be making brash claims. This
okay.
is something I've observed over the past 10 years.
That's fair enough. And we maybe perhaps I could talk to you about it just from my own knowledge off the air, and maybe
that would be fine.
I'll keep your name out of it at that point and let people know what the targeted group may be and what the other group may be.
There is a religious influence, but that's not to say that these people aren't just being used as puppets by some broader interest.
Very good point. Can you stick with us one more segment of 5 minutes?
Okay.
Okay, looking at Julian McKinney, our last segment, and Julian's an authority in the use of surveillance and electronic weaponry. And this is an email question, kind of a technical one, from a TI. And let me read this to you, and perhaps you could answer it. Are the protocols for each individual modified based to custom tailor it for the specific targeted individual? And if so, how does this process work?
Yes, indeed, they are modified. There is a basic protocol that the perpetrators begin with, but the PI contributes to the modification. A good example of that would be if someone, I'm trying to think of a good example. If the PI feels a need to cooperate even in the most subtle fashion with persons who are harassing him or her, he or she will modify his behavior in Pavlovian condition, which alters the protocol. Targets are constantly monitored, and if they respond emotionally to a particular trigger, that will be built into the protocol. If the target displays a certain sense of guilt or embarrassment about a subject, that will be built into the protocol. It's an ongoing process. And one thing I want to emphasize is no TI should look for a reason as to why this is going on. That's a serious, serious mistake. I know that it's a natural tendency. I did that myself when they started on me, and over the years, I came up with probably six different excuses.
Is it still going on with you?
Oh, yes. Not to the degree that it was before, but certainly in very lethal form.
And how has it hampered your life?
It's come close to being lethal on a number of occasions. I've dealt with gang stalking head on. And essentially put that to rest. I've developed a means for communicating with perps directly and for making them feel like the trailer trash that they are. So gang stalking is not one of their favorite activities in my case. The primary activity now is to see what I can survive in the way of an induced brain aneurysm or stroke or a heart attack.
And I just had a caller call me who doesn't want to get on the air, wants to know, does moving help, moving your location?
Running, if you're talking about moving to a completely new location, no. This country is wired to the hilt for immediate transfer. Your protocol follows you wherever you go, so it's a waste of time. Moving about physically in place will not change anything, other than if you make a 180-degree turn, you will notice that the targeting will suddenly stop because the weapon systems are programmed to focus on a particular area of your anatomy, and if you turn, the targeting will suddenly end.
Interesting.
If you turn back, it will hit you again.
Now, going full circle in the last 2 minutes here, in 1991 you published Microwave Harassment and Mind Control Experimentation. This has been passed around the Internet and over thousands of domain sites over the past 15 years. Can you tell us how someone can get a hold of this publication? To be informed.
It's not copyrighted.
About
all they need to do is plug in my last name, McKinney, and type in the title Microwave Harassment and Mind Control Experimentation, and innumerable sites will appear, and just read it from there. Gives you a good insight as to what the pattern is when the harassment begins.
Now, let me just spell your name so people that are going to do that. It's M-C, K-I-N-N-E-Y, McKinney.
Right.
And then it's
McKinney.
Microwave Harassment and Mind Control Experimentation from
right.
an authority in the field. I guess since 1981, have you seen, I guess, a question I wanted to ask. From 2001, have you seen any, from the time of 9/11, has there been an increase in the last 4 or 5 years with this type of that you've seen, with the number of people contacting you, the widespread? Has it been more widespread during this time since 9/11?
Not since 9/11. I would say back in the early 90s, I've seen a tremendous expansion of these activities since the early 1990s, and it has moved forward in consistent fashion, become ever more sophisticated and ever more widespread. There was no sudden burst or flurry of activity since 9/11.
And you have no help whatsoever with the political arena in this, correct? The politicians will not touch us with a 10-foot pole?
That's right. And even those who purport to be liberally inclined, and I'm speaking about members of the Democratic Party, will not touch it because, quote-unquote, they know what's going on. They simply don't have the funds to be able to pursue it. All sorts of humma excuses will be furnished for not pursuing something like this. And before you close, and I hear the music in the background.
Well, you can stay another minute if you want.
Okay.
It's up to you. Why don't you come back for 2 minutes on the other side of the break, and then we'll finish up, okay?
Okay.
Okay, okay. Back with Julian McKinney in 3 minutes on the Investigative Journal. Say something at the break.
I did. I want to thank you very, very much for taking on this this subject. There are so few people in the media, or as a matter of fact, you're the only one I know of, who has the guts to address it.
And, you know, it really doesn't, and I just in defense of every media person, I don't think it's guts in a sense. Maybe it is. I don't consider myself any guts in this issue. I consider it to be an issue that you need to take time to understand it, and that's what I would recommend to the people in the media that haven't touched this issue. If it isn't being downright censored by someone above you, then at least take the time to talk. I'll spend time talking to you about it because it took me a little while to figure it out, and I'll tell you what, it's people like you that need to be applauded, because it's your efforts that are bringing this to the forefront. You're laying the credibility on the line. But I thank you anyway for your kind words. And with that, I wanted to say goodbye to you, and we're going to have to move on. And we'll have you on again to talk about this. And thank you so much.
And thank you very much.
Okay, that was Julian McKinney, and she was as an authority on the use of electronic weaponry, microwave weaponry, and she was with us for the last hour and a half. And we're going to continue.